I was asked to talk about the Book of Ruth, and it's the book in the Old Testament, and it's quite different to most of the Old Testament, being a self-contained personal story. It's only 4 chapters long and a very easy read. It's a story of faithfulness and reward, showing God's care for ordinary people. Gives an insight into everyday life in Old Testament times. It's set during the time of the judges in Israel, in that period between the time of Moses and Joshua. And we heard about Joshua from Martin 2 weeks ago, and the time of the first kings of Israel, Saul, then David, and then Solomon. And the book starts with a time of hardship, famine. The land wasn't always flowing with milk and honey, and we can read in Judges that the Israelites were not in complete control of the land until the time of David. And during the time of Gideon, for example, the Midianites were taking most of the crops away. And the story of Ruth starts at one of these times of hardship. Naomi and her husband were economic migrants, not too dissimilar to much of the world today. And here's a recap from today's reading of chapter 1 of Ruth. Naomi and her husband Elimelech had to leave Judah with their 2 sons to live in Moab. And now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her 2 sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her 2 sons and her husband. But God came to Israel's aid, and there was food again in the land, possibly even a bumper crop. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her 2 daughters-in-law, she left the place where she'd been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands?" At this they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and their gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, even if death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So Ruth was showing her faithfulness to her mother-in-law's God, who had become her God as well. Now, where was Moab? Well, it was to the right of Israel, the small country opposite the Dead Sea. If you remember, the children had been afraid to go into the Promised Land directly, because the spies had brought back the report and it had frightened them. And then they'd had to spend 40 years going round by Edom, which was below Moab, and then Moab itself, before crossing the Jordan opposite Jericho. Relations weren't always friendly between Israel and Moab, but obviously at this time they were. Naomi and Ruth seemed to have had very little when they arrived back in Israel, so Ruth had to go straight to work. The poor were allowed to pick up the stalks of grain dropped by the harvesters as a means of relief. And then Ruth said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favour." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you," he said. "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseers of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" Now why does Boaz ask who Ruth belonged to? Ruth had had a reputation already from her good behaviour. Because Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay with the women who work for me." At this she bowed down her face to the ground and she asked him, "Why have you found such favour? I have found such favour in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner." Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come to take refuge." I just remember that word, wings. Now, a little later, Naomi was thinking about Ruth's future, and she thought of Boaz's care for Ruth might go further. And she thought it wasn't a coincidence that Ruth had gone to Boaz's field. So one day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he'll be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he's finished eating and drinking." Obviously, she wanted Boaz in a good mood. "When he lies down, note the place where he's lying, then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He'll tell you what to do." In the middle of the night, something startled Boaz. He turned and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner," and that word for corner in Hebrew is the same word as the word wing, when it was talking about resting under God's wings. "So spread the corner of your garment over me, since you're a kinsman redeemer of your family." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You've not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. Now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town will know that you're a woman of noble character." Interestingly, in the Living Bible, what Ruth says to Boaz is also translated as, "Make me your wife according to God's law." And it was also in my Italian Bible the same. So that's interesting, isn't it? And of course, we've just said that Boaz was called a kinsman redeemer. Now, what's a kinsman redeemer all about? Well, in Hebrew, there's a word goel, and that's translated kinsman redeemer. And it indicates a tradition of behavior in ancient Israel. And something similar occurred in other countries round about. And the law that this is concerned with is expressed in a passage in Leviticus and another one in Deuteronomy. And the passage in Leviticus 25:25 says, "If one of your countrymen becomes poor and sells some of his property, his nearest relative is to come and redeem what his countryman has sold." And then in Deuteronomy 25:5-6 it says, "If brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears will carry on the name of the dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel." Well, that second passage only applies to brothers living together. And Boaz was not a brother of Elimelech, and they certainly didn't live together. But Boaz was interpreting the law in the spirit that Jesus later taught us. He was going the second mile, going beyond the strict confines of the law. And we also see here a picture of God's relationship with us through Jesus. Jesus is our goal, paying the price of redemption for each of us on the cross, and then welcoming us into his family. And the story of Ruth gives us the clearest example of this in the Old Testament. There were others in the Old Testament who were bad examples of applying the principle. Lot's daughters, remember Lot was Abraham's nephew, ended up having children by their father, and one of them became the founder of Moab. And then Judah and Tamar were another couple who had a disreputable episode you can read about, but their son in fact was in direct line to David and then Jesus. But there was a problem about Boaz being kinsman redeemer, and he says, "Although it's true that I am kinsman redeemer of our family, there's another who's more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your kinsman redeemer, good, let him redeem you. But if he's not willing, as sure as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, "No one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you're wearing, and hold it out." When she did so, he poured in 6 measures of barley and placed the bundle on her. Then he went back to town. So Ruth and Boaz were being discreet, as nothing had been settled between them yet. And Boaz again showed his generosity to Naomi and Ruth. So Boaz went straight next morning to the town gate where business was done, and to see his closer relative who should be the kinsman redeemer. This man offered to buy Naomi's field. He probably thought he was getting a bargain, as it would become his when Naomi died childless. But Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property." At this the kinsman redeemer said, "Then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself, I cannot do it." So the kinsman redeemer said to Boaz, "Buy it yourself." And he removed his sandal. Doing that was a way of showing his guilt in not having been the kinsman redeemer when he should have. Then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today your witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown." So now we have a happy ending. So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. Then he made love to her. The Lord enabled her to conceive and she gave birth to a son. The woman said, "Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So Ruth obtained a husband and a son, and Naomi became a very happy grandmother. And we see that last throwaway line, that Ruth would become in the direct line to King David and then Jesus. She's one of the four women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew's Gospel. Besides the Virgin Mary, the other two are Rahab the harlot, who you may remember hid the Israelite spies before the fall of Jericho, and Tamar, who we've already heard about. Both of them and Ruth were non-Israelites, so God wasn't bothered about racial purity and spotless character in the ancestry of Jesus. He was more concerned about the heart. So what can we learn from this story? Well, Ruth was an outsider, but she was accepted readily and joyfully. God cared for her as much as any of his chosen people. And then Ruth's hard work, honesty and integrity was rewarded as she received blessings she probably never imagined. But she did have to wait for them, and we may have to wait. And then Ruth found a family of God's people, say a bit like being under God's wing. And if we've experienced blessing like that, we should thank God also, like Ruth did. And Ruth was also fruitful, not only with the child, but she was a blessing to others. And might we have said about us half as glowing a tribute as Boaz said about Ruth. And I want to finish with a New Testament verse that sums up the story. It's the verse, "All things work together for good," etc. But in the JV Chillet, I've used the JB Phillips translation, except I've modified it a bit after the advice of N.T. Wright. And in JB Phillips it says, "To those who love God, who are called according to his plan, everything that happens fits into a pattern for good." But according to N.T. Wright, we should say it a little bit differently. Instead of two at the beginning, it should be four. And the Greek word can mean either, because I think God doesn't do things to us. God does things for us. And then the second part about everything fitting. In fact, in the Greek, really, it's that the verb is singular rather than plural. So God should be the subject of the sentence. And as I said, God is not watching from the sidelines. He's actively involved. So the sentence really, or the verse really, should read, "For those who love God, who are called according to his plan, God fits everything that happens into a pattern for good." And that's Romans 8 verse 28 in the JB Phillips translation, modified by me. Thank you.